How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. It is Easter Sunday, April 20, 2014. Figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined today, as always, by Mike Sempervivi here on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, plus a replay Monday morning, 7 o'clock a.m. Eastern, if you want to check us out. Actually, 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, if you want to check us out on Monday mornings as well. If you miss any of this show, you can always check out the replay. Got a lot of stuff to get into here today on Easter Sunday. Only going to do 1 hour today, but we got a lot of stuff to pack into 1 hour, including a lot of thoughts on Warrior Week on the WWE Network. Did you get a chance to watch any of this programming on the network? There was a lot of great stuff. There was, in particular, a Warrior documentary, a one-hour Warrior documentary that was put together in the days following his death. Had interviews with a lot of the biggest players in WWE, including Vince McMahon himself. Of course, Vince McMahon and Warrior had a very storied history. A lot of issues back and forth between the two sides, but they did come to terms in the last several months and weeks of Warrior's life. It was actually a very touching documentary there at the end. Vince McMahon getting very emotional when talking about the final days of the Warrior, and the Warrior himself giving Vince McMahon an autographed copy of The Little Engine That Could, because years ago, Vince compared him to The Little Engine That Could. And Warrior took that with him throughout his life and I guess gave Vince McMahon an autographed copy of the book just days before he passed away. So very powerful documentary. If you've not seen it on the WWE Network, it is available right now. You can check that out. We can talk a little bit of UFC on Fox as well, plus Legends House. We'll talk Raw and Impact. And a lot of news. There's a lot of stuff going on. After about the 20-minute mark, we'll start taking your phone calls as well, 855-478-4478. But check it out, everybody. Back in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here on Easter Sunday. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. If you'd like to join the show in about 10 minutes, we'll start taking your phone calls, 855-478-4478. And, of course, you can contact us on Twitter. I am at Brian Alvarez. And I just discovered that I am followed by, are you aware of this, Mike? Viano17 is following me.
Viano17 is?
Yeah. Just followed me a couple of days ago. I'm baffled. I was unaware there were 17 of them, but apparently there are, so a lot of big stars following me on Twitter if you want to check that out. Mike, speaking of big stars, what did you make of the Ultimate Warrior documentary that is playing right now on the WWE Network?
That was really good. That's very sad occasion, obviously, for why they did the documentary as quickly as they did. But as someone that, you know, somebody who's been watching WWE for a long time, and anybody out there obviously already knows this, their production values are second to none. When they put their mind to whatever it is that they want to do, when it comes to video production and putting together these packages, they can be fantastic. And some of the DVDs have been great, even if you don't agree with the content or what's said on them or the spin. The quality of the thing is usually always fantastic, and being a network subscriber, I hope there are more of these types of things. Obviously, not as sad of a situation as it was with the Warrior, but they did a great job, and they did a great job in a short period of time. Obviously, they were filming a lot of the stuff that they had for a future DVD release that was coming out, as well as other things that they were doing, and they were able to turn around to talk to Vince and Stephanie and Triple H and a couple other people after his passing and tie all that in together and get it up on the website. I think they did a really great job. It's great quality. And as far as the content goes, I really thought they did a pretty darn good job there, too. This isn't, you know, if people, there's a lot of things you can bring up from Ultimate Warrior's past and things that have been said back and forth, him to people that still work for WWE, some cruel things that he's said about other WWE legends and things like that. But under the circumstances of the story, you know, this was not a hardcore 4-hour, you know, deep in-depth biography, and WWE Network's not going to do that sort of thing anyway. So when you take it for what it was and the amount of time that they had to turn around and come back out with it, I really, really thought it was excellent. And again, under less tragic situations, I look forward to seeing a lot more of these types of things end up on the network.
Robin here says that Warrior documentary moved me to tears. It is still weird seeing him a while ago at the Hall of Fame, WrestleMania, and Raw. That from Twitter. Yeah, it was surreal. I mean, the one thing that a lot of people are talking about in terms of the documentary, really a few things. Number one is just Vince McMahon on the documentary. Very difficult to watch. This kind of stuff hits him very hard. Especially after they made up. And as I talked about last night on the show with Dave, it was very clear watching the Warrior documentary that one of the most notable things about it is really how much Vince and the Warrior wanted to be each other. In the sense that Vince from the time that he was a young kid, he always wanted to be a pro wrestler. And for a long time, obviously, you know, his father would not allow him to be a pro wrestler. It was not until Vince, you know, the boom period of the late 90s, Vince finally got into the ring and became a performer and kind of got a chance to live his dream. But Vince always wanted to be a guy like the Ultimate Warrior. Great physique, great hair, in there beating everybody up in the pro wrestling ring. And at the same time, the Warrior himself always wanted to be a guy like Vince McMahon, a self-made businessman, a huge success, a multimillionaire on his own hard work. And so really that was the issue with the two guys. You know, they wanted to be each other, and they were very alike in a lot of ways, very, very headstrong. And so they had a lot of clashes, but at the end of the day, I think they greatly respected each other, and they finally got a chance to iron everything out there in the end, and the next thing you know, Warrior is gone. And I thought that was a very, I mean, that was to me the story of the entire documentary. And then other little things like just seeing the Warrior and how much smaller he was in the final days of his life as compared to even a year earlier. Obviously, you can ask a lot of questions about that. And of course, there was the line by Sting where he was just talking about how I can't believe he's gone. You know, he was here and he had a chance to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He had a chance to go out there on Raw. And he got a chance to do all of these things and he was so happy. And then just like that, it's over. He's gone. And kind of just it was very sobering, I would think, for most people to watch that and realize that at any time it could be all over for you. And so I just thought that they did a tremendous job. You can say whatever you want about the Warrior. You know, and there's a lot of people that are going to say a lot of things about the Warrior, decisions he made, choices he made. But at the end of the day, as far as putting together a tribute video on his life and really approaching a lot of this stuff, not necessarily everything, but I thought it was tremendous.
Yeah, they touched on things that, you know, WWE over the last, you know, when we first started watching, especially me, you know, early 80s, and then you see it kind of go along and them rebuilding history and changing history and all that sort of stuff. And again, they didn't have the time, nor would I think they had to have the want to really delve into and let the public know every single last little detail of their the problems that they had with each other and the lawsuits and the whole nine yards. But they did. They didn't gloss over much that way, as far as they at least touched on it. And it was as honest of a documentary as I've seen from WWE, I'd probably ever. And, you know, like what you were saying, I mean, my wife caught the end of it. I could see, you know, her tearing up. And, you know, I just kind of got this weird wave over me, too, because it's just because of how everything happened, how it, you know, the when it happened was really the thing. And, you know, just his speech on the way out and the fact that he was so happy and things, fences seemed to be being mended. It was really something else. And Ted DiBiase was on the Legends Roundtable, which, you know, Ultimate Warrior and his Hall of Fame speech, they have gone after each other over the years a lot. And You know, I tend to side in some ways with DiBiase more, but if you, you know, again, it doesn't really matter. They've gone after each other, but they had DiBiase on that round table. And it's not a must-see because they use a lot of the footage that they use in the documentary, and they have Booker T, Ted DiBiase, and Sergeant Slaughter being interviewed by Joss Matthews talking about him, and they do a good job. But I think the biggest thing about that was I was surprised me to see Ted DiBiase on there, and he even says that at the very beginning that I know a lot of people didn't expect to see me there. But he said something, you know, with him finding religion, and that was a problem that the Warrior had, that with a lot of guys in wrestling who become reborn, you know, DiBiase decided to keep his distance and to stay away from Warrior that weekend. And, you know, it was a reminder to him, as it is to everybody else, that, you know, sometimes it's better to drop the grudge because you don't know when you are going to see someone again. And are the things that have been done or said, you know, are they really that big of a deal? You know, Warrior said some cruel things about a lot of people, but people have said some really cruel things about the Warrior. And at the end of the day, does you know, how much of that, some of that stuff really matter? And I think when it came to the case of DiBiase, you know, as a, you know, a guy who's an ordained minister now and the whole nine yards, I think that probably gave him a lot more pause. And he admits that, you know, I should have just went and, you know, had the time, because, again, you never know when these things, you never know what's going to happen and when things are going to end.
The video is Warrior, I believe it's called The Ultimate Legend. It is up on the WWE Network right now. They're doing a number of, or they did last week, a number of Warrior specials. There was a Legends Roundtable, as noted, and Ultimate Warrior's Greatest Matches, I believe they did, and maybe some others as well. I think they did 4 days, so I'm not sure what I'm missing here. But the Ultimate Warrior, the Ultimate Legend, the one-hour documentary, it is pretty much a must-see. So make sure you head up there and check that out. We'll be talking about that all throughout the week. I think Vinny and Craig and I are going to review it on Tuesday. Dave and I talked about it last night. Obviously, we've talked about it here. So you will hear plenty about this one. And it was excellent. When we come back from the break, we're also going to talk about Legends House, which debuted this week on the network. We'll talk about UFC later on in the program, TNA with Eric Young, and a lot more. Plus, take your phone calls, 855-478-4478 after this break. Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I've actually got the Warrior Week schedule right here in front of me. Tonight, at 10 Eastern on the network, is Warrior's Greatest Matches. We've got the WrestleMania 6 coming up on Wednesday at 10 Eastern. Thursday at 10 Eastern, it's the Warrior Biography, The Ultimate Legend. And then Friday is Legends of WrestleMania. And of course, all of this is in the in-demand area. This is just some information about the live stream, which, by the way, at this moment, I believe, is showing WWE Main Event. Nikki Bella is on her way down to the ring right now, which, by the way, reminds me that tonight is Total Divas, so make sure you check that out. I'll be up later tonight with Vinny. We'll be talking the SmackDown show. We're going to move the SmackDown review to Sunday instead of Tuesday. What a shocking development. So we'll talk about SmackDown, Ring of Honor, as well as Total Divas, and some other topics as well, so you can get ready for that. Tonight should be a good time. Now, Mike, Legends House, what did you think of the show?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch Total Divas tonight. I don't know if I can handle this much real reality in 1 week. I didn't hate it as much as I thought I would. And I take that back. I wasn't sure exactly. I knew it was going to be goofy. I knew it was going to be corny. That's what everybody seemed to say coming out of it. They could not get the thing latched on to a network like E, and like they did with Total Divas. And you look at Total Divas and you think to yourself, okay, if this couldn't make it on, what could this possibly be? Especially when you see the cast of characters that they have. With that said, it as far as it being on the network and you having it on the background, there are worse ways, I guess, to spend 45 minutes than to watch this. I don't think it'll be appointment programming or anything like that, but it is very... I don't want to say dramatic is the word, but the whole show is, unless I'm completely wrong about this, and we'll see as it goes along, you know, one huge screaming work. You know, the big question for everyone going in is, you know, we've been brothers for so long and we've been in this business together for so long, but do we really know each other? And are we good? You know, they went inferring that we could have problems. And I just, you know, it's, you figure any problems they have are going to be probably a little bit put on. But it's, you know, as far as goofy, campy fun, it could certainly have that. Now, after seeing the first episode, I would have loved to have some sort of, you know, incredible debate going on. Just forget about everybody else. Just put Gary Busey and Roddy Piper in a room and give them some subjects and let them talk.
Don't give them a lighter.
That's there's plenty of things you probably shouldn't be giving those men in a face to face for 45 minutes. But I mean, again, as far as the campy goofiness, sure, why not? And they have some, you know, for anything anybody wants to say about Hillbilly Jim. I mean, he's been doing a serious show for quite some time. Mean Gene, you know, has been around forever and a day. And you know, and all these guys know how to be themselves. And that was a very apparent in the first episode. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of that as it goes along.
You know what's interesting about the show is it ended up on the network because they filmed the show like 2 years ago. And the idea was, let's see if we can shop this around and get it on. God even knows what network they'd get it on. It's not going to go on E. Maybe the, I don't even know. Do they have like an old person's channel, Nick at Night? Anyway. So
like
they
get like a Universal HD or something that just needs to have some random programming on there.
Sure. So they shopped the thing around and nobody wanted it. And so, you know, I figured, oh man, this show must be hideous. And they showed some clips of it when they did the WWE Network announcement in Vegas. They had some clips from Legends House. And I remember watching the clips and I just thought, oh my God, this show looks horrible. So then Legends House debuts, and I watched it, and it wasn't that bad. It was not like a horrible show. It was nothing like what I expected. You know, everybody, it was just kind of like, it was maybe a nice show isn't the way to really describe it. But when it was over, we had my grandmother, granny of all people, on, talking about Legends House. And she reviewed it and she talked about the whatever happened on the show. They go, they bring cookies to neighbors. There's a good looking girl there, you know, and then when she was done, we moved on with the show. And then we had some people saying, you know, I haven't seen the show yet. And Granny didn't do a very good review because I don't even know what happened. And I explained to them that, well, once you see the show, you'll understand because nothing happened on this show.
The highest drama of this show was whether they eat or not, because the Pat Patterson famous cabbage rolls that he makes, they didn't think they were going to be done in time.
Yes, the issue to me, the reason to me that the show did not get picked up was not because it was a bad show or because the show sucked, but it was probably because the show was just boring. Now, maybe next week it'll be really exciting, but you got to realize that I don't know who put this show together. I probably should find that out. Maybe it's the same people that put together Total Divas. I highly doubt it. I don't remember seeing any credits at the end to is it Bunham Murray? What's the name of the anyway?
Luna Murray or whatever. Is the
sure.
Ones who did Real World and
the,
all that.
The people that put together Total Divas. I mean, this is their business. Their business is to make compelling reality television. And so they put together these storylines, they write these scripts, they do all of the old reality show. You know, it's a formula. And I think that's why Total Divas has worked, because you've got real reality show people putting together this reality show. My guess is that WWE probably just, I don't want to say they did the whole thing in-house, because I'm sure they had some consultation, I'm sure they had some people working on it. But at the end of the day, I think it was a WWE-produced reality show as opposed to a reality show producers produced reality show. And so to me, it's just like they filmed a bunch of guys. They tried to put together a show with some interesting clips. Wrestlers are interesting because of who they are. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, I don't know. It just, there was nothing on it that was really all that compelling. And when the show was over, I don't really have any desire to watch it next week, but not because it was bad, just because nothing happened.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't offensive or anything like that, you know, at all. It's just, it's like you said. I mean, there, it takes a lot of work to create reality as far as being on TV. And, you know, we see it with Total Divas this year. I mean, there were at least, you know, strands when that first thing first came out and they showed the behind the scenes of WrestleMania and everything. There were some strands of reality that worked their way into the show. As opposed to, you know, the second or the half season that they did, now definitely in this season that they're doing, where everything seems to be kind of it seems like more of a AE-based reality show more than ever, as far as, you know, the high drama and things like that. And I think, I'm not going to say they learn from that or anything, but I have a feeling going on down the lines, I don't know if you hire somebody into WWE films or however this works or anything like that, that you probably get some more pros in there to work with the WWE guys to better create situations like this, because they're always, as long as this network's around, they're always going to need original programming. And if they fall to a position where they need sponsors, or they need sponsors to put, or at the very least have products placed in the background or something like that, I mean, you know, they're always going to need to do shows like this. So getting some better people in there who are, you know, swifter with this and seeing what worked on Total Divas and what is or isn't going to work on this show, you know, you can get somebody in there and continue to do these things in a lot of different ways for a long, long time.
All right. As I had expected here, let's look at this here. The production company listed for Total Divas, actually we know Total Divas, what am I looking at here? The production company listed for Legends House is WWE. That is the production company, and so there you go. As I had figured, it is not, is it Bunim Murray? Is that how you pronounce it?
It's B-U-N-I-M. I think it's, yeah, Bunim Murray.
Bunim Murray, okay, so there you go. So we are talking exactly as I had stated. You know, Total Divas is put together by people that do reality shows for a living, and Legends House was put together by WWE. So that would explain why one is actually doing quite well as a reality show, and the other, it may do well. It's hard to say what will do well on the WWE network. I don't know how many people are going to watch Legends House, but it's certainly a very different kind of show. It's I hate to say, but it's kind of boring. So I guess we'll see. It was the first episode. You know, maybe they shot a pilot and then decided to keep shooting, and the rest of the episodes will be more exciting. But we shall see. So that was the Legends House, everybody. And you also, was there one other thing that you watched on the network?
That was pretty much it. I watched that. I watched the Legends, you know, the Legends Roundtable on Warrior.
Oh, Roundtable. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much about it, outside of just, you know, the normal fare of flipping through the network and seeing, you know, different random things on there.
So we got television to talk about as well. We've got Raw from Monday night. We've got Impact with Eric Young as the heavyweight champion of the world. And we've got UFC on Fox. Let's start quickly with TNA here. Eric Young is the champion. It's preposterous. But they did do the best job they could in trying to make him into a credible champion on this past Thursday's Impact. My feeling is it's too little too late. He was a comedy guy for too long. They had an opportunity years ago to make him something, and they made him into a clown, and now they're trying to switch everything around. So we're going to talk about that after the break. You're welcome to call in about any of this, 855-478-4478. Phone lines open when we come back from the break as well. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Here for an hour today, I want to send a big shout out to the American Forces Network. Big thanks to everybody out there. And, of course, we're on the cable radio network as well. And for more, you can always check out WrestlingObserver.com. Daily radio shows every single day. We do radio at WrestlingObserver.com. And you can not only hear the radio shows live as a subscriber, but for just $10.99 a month, you get full podcast access to every single show that we have ever done. I'm talking every single show dating back to 2005, thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio are available in the archives on demand for you as a subscriber. Of course, you can sign up long-term and get the price down to as low as $9.99. Same price as the WWE Network. We talk about all the television. We talk about all of the news. We review all of the shows. So much great stuff up at WrestlingObserver.com. So again, if you miss this show, if it's the only time per week that you get to hear Wrestling Observer Live, you are missing out if you do not sign up at WrestlingObserver.com. If you listen to your audio on the way to work, if you listen to it while you're at work, in the car, commute, wherever you listen to your audio, you will never run out of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts audio as a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. Great time to do it as well. With the network kicking off, we're always reviewing network specials and more, as we will later on tonight, only for subscribers, as well as tomorrow after Raw, etc., etc. So much stuff, so check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, we were talking about Eric Young as TNA champion before the break. What are your thoughts on how they have promoted his reign so far?
It's as good as you can get, I guess. You know, I saw the Rumble last week. I saw him win the title, and it's like, you know, and I've always liked it. Everybody likes Eric Young. I think that's Eric Young. There's a lot of guys who fit the mold better in TNA, but he's a great example of the mistakes they've made over the years, because Eric Young has always been able to wrestle. He's always had a personality. I mean, I think it started with the Team Canada thing. He came down with Scott D'Amore, and they did that whole thing with Petey Williams and him and Robert Roode and everything. And I mean, he was good then, and he's gotten, you know, obviously the physique. He looks a lot different now, but he always had a good, you know, physique. He's not a big guy, and even though he's balding, he changed his look by growing out that big bushy beard and everything. But we went through this a little bit before with him trying to become a serious character when they were doing, I think it was Kevin Nash, and I forget exactly what it was, but it was like, how can I take this guy seriously? Now he's supposed to be the badass spokesman for these legends guys. You know, that didn't make any sense. And you know, the thing with him and Abyss, you know, that was, again, it was great for what it was, but now you're making him your world champion by basically stealing the WWE story, which that was kind of a funny thing with Dixie Carter, you know, doing the, you know, Eric Young, you know, this is all my idea with the beard, and she showed pictures of, you know, Eric Young's transformation over the years with having the big bushy beard, and he had it first before Daniel Bryan, but at the end of the day, it's all just nonsense, and it's him as a believable world champion, as bad as it is, how can you really take him seriously? And this, you know, last week was really cool. You know, what they did, I thought it worked with him in Abyss. But again, what he's going to have to be blowing through guys to try to create some semblance of credibility. And there's nothing about their booking. And even if their booking all of a sudden turned around and was great, how do you have the guys to come in there and make him a credible world champion? Because, you know, you couldn't do it with Magnus. And I'm not saying that you had a clean slate with Magnus or anything, because, you know, his work was average inside the ring, but he carried himself. He looked like he could be the next guy. And instead, you know, him and Ethan Carter both, and granted, they both had their things, but Ethan Carter's chasing Willow around in the North Carolina backwoods. And, you know, Eric Young is, you know, now your world champion after being a joke, you know, for how long? And Magnus, you have him win the title in England, where, you know, you had good crowds for those shows and you had people, you know, kind of excited. You know, it's, you know, the TNA's biggest fan base seems to be in England, and you had people excited, and then he couldn't go out there and beat anybody. And they told a terrible story. I can kind of understand the cowardly story they were trying to tell with him, but wrong guy at the wrong time. So I don't know. I just, it's what it is. They have to put something on their Thursday nights, and there could be far worse things, and this is no insult to Eric Young. It's just, it's really tough for me to believe it or really get into it and care about it. It may change over time, but how it's worked with TNA, I tend to doubt it.
Now, what about Daniel Bryan versus Kane? If that ends up being the main event for the next special event, they're no longer pay-per-views. I don't know. I don't like the idea of Daniel Bryan facing a guy who's been around since 1997, in the non-main event of the show after he wins the world title in what should be the hottest period of his entire career.
I'm okay with this once. And I put it in the forum as to why. This isn't his fault. It's WWE's fault. Now, I'm fine. Obviously, if it was a different situation, he should be main eventing and defending his title against somebody. The problem with that is, you know, obviously they don't have the guys. You know, they're three, Triple H, Batista, and Randy Orton. You know, Batista and Randy Orton are obvious opponents for him. And they're now tied up with Evolution or with the Shield. I'm actually okay with that. Fine. But you look at the rest of the heel roster that they have, and it's like, and I understand what you're going to say about Cesaro, and I know exactly what you mean, and I'm going to let you say it here in a minute, but
I don't need to say it. I got other things to say. Go on.
Well, say, to me, Cesaro's too soon, because I'd rather have that story built up over a little bit of time.
Well,
where,
I will say something then. I don't think you're going to get that if they don't do it now.
Well, that, yeah, and that's, you know, and that sucks. And that's, you know, that's a completely separate thing. You know, Damian Sandow needs to be rebuilt. And then you look at the rest of the roster and it's like 3MB, Titus, you know, all of these guys. Who else could it be? At least you have some sort of built-in story with Kane. But yeah, I mean, yes, they should have probably rocketed Cesaro out of there. But if you wanted the best possible match, and it's the only really interesting thing on there to me until somebody turns dirty, whether it be Dolph Ziggler or Sheamus or whoever it is, to give him something fresh and new with some, you know, with somebody that people believe in. But to me, when it comes to Rusev, you got a long way to go towards that one. Although Rusev, look, if anybody's going to get something out of Rusev at this point in his career, Daniel Bryan could certainly do so. For, you know, if you had to go 15 minutes, Rusev can't do that with anybody else. He could probably do it with Daniel Bryan, no problem. And he'd make him look good. But to me, it's too early for him or Cesaro. So doing it with Kane, you knock this one out of the way. Then you go to either Orton or Batista or Cesaro coming up in May. And you have a plan for him going forward. I'm okay with it. But I it's not his fault. It's WWE's creative. I mean, you know, Barrett's another one. Hopefully they continue to rebuild him because, again, he desperately needs it. And he's a guy that people want to get behind. And he's another guy that would have a hell of a thing with Daniel Bryan. So I understand that this is a bump and a click, but I don't want it to I don't want this to be looked at as a Rey Mysterio thing yet, because I don't think it will be. But I guess time will tell.
I just know that somebody said to me, Brian, do you realize that last year at Extreme Rules, John Cena, right after winning the title from Rock at WrestleMania, John Cena worked the semi-main event against Ryback. How is that any different than what is going on with Daniel Bryan? And I would like to address that situation. Number one, yes, John Cena beat The Rock for the title. And he won the championship at WrestleMania, exactly like Daniel Bryan did at this year's WrestleMania. However, that was about the 9th time, 10th time? How many times John Cena won the world title? That's like the 10th time that he won that belt. That's very different. I realized that Daniel Bryan had been the champion before for like 24 hours. I think actually for like 5 minutes and then for 24 hours was exactly how it worked. This is his first big major run at the title. This is not comparable to John Cena beating The Rock and winning the belt. John Cena had been on top for a decade. So there's no big deal with him being the semi-main. Second of all, yes, John Cena was in the semi-main. I don't know if they would have booked it differently. I don't know if he would have been in the main event if they decided to do a different kind of finish. But if you recall, that match had a non-finish. That was a match where Ryback put John Cena through the video wall, and that was just the end of the match. They had no bell, they had no finish, they had no nothing. You can't go off the air on a pay-per-view with that finish. So it ended up being the semi-main event. Maybe it would have been the semi-main event otherwise, because Triple H is always in the main event if he's headlining. I don't know. But I don't find these situations comparable. Bryan just won the title. It's the beginning of his first big-time reign. It's your chance to really make this guy for years. He should not be in the semi-main event against Kane.
I agree. And you have Cesaro, Heyman, and Bryan. I think they could put together something in a month where you could build on it later on and make that the main event. But it's, you know, then this is worrisome for, I think, looking at the summer, because no matter who Bryan faces, you sit there and you look at it and you go, you know, is the Shield in Evolution, is this going to be the top of the, and again, great for the guys in the Shield if this is going to be the main event month in and month out leading to SummerSlam. But obviously, no matter who he's facing, that could be really, really, really bad news for Daniel Bryan.
Now, the other main topic we got to talk about very quickly today is last night's UFC on Fox. Fabricio Werdum looked awesome there in the main event. What was your prediction going into that fight, and were you surprised with how it turned out?
In hindsight, not so much. I just discounted Werdum, and I was drinking that Travis Brown Kool-Aid, and it's tasty Kool-Aid. It really is. And I think, you know, obviously Brown gassed himself. You know, he was gassed in very early in the first round, and he just couldn't do anything with Werdum. And Werdum had his way with him on his feet, on the ground, which the ground's not that big of a shock at all, but he just couldn't do anything with him, and he was able to stay in there. So I think there should be a little bit of a feather put in Brown's cap, even though this was, for all intents and purposes, a number one contenders match that he was basically swept in. But I think he gets a little credit for that. But I was drinking that Kool-Aid hard on him, and it's not that I discounted Werdum and his skills, because you can't do that at all. I just kind of forgot about him I picked Brown, I thought he'd be able to knock him out. I thought he'd be able to get to him and stay away from him. And that certainly was not the case. And Werdum had his way with him. And you forget how good Fabricio Werdum could be until you see a performance like that, that he just, I mean, I don't want to say he wiped the floor with Brown, but he really had his way with him. And I don't think he's going to have much success with Cain Velasquez. I really don't. I think Cain's going to be able to, again, and he's coming off an injury. So I'm saying this not knowing the condition he's going to be in. But, you know, I believe in Cain's power and his stand-up. And his wrestling being able to hold off Werdum. But with that said, at least we have an exciting heavyweight championship fight that looks to be coming up possibly in November. And, you know, I guess that's really all that matters coming out of this. And to me, Brown wasn't crushed. You know, him with the way Werdum beat him, the fact that he was able to breathe at all and be upright at the end of that fight, I give him a little bit of credit.
We've got the overnight numbers for the show. 1.99 million viewers. Yeah. And not good. It's just tough. I mean, listen, this was the third show in a week. They had a show last Saturday. They had a show on Wednesday. And they had a show last night. And they got another show this coming Saturday. So, I mean, I don't know what to say that hasn't been said a million times. There are too many shows. There are too few stars. Travis Brown, you know, I remember I was talking to Todd about this on Thursday. He was very, very excited for the show. And yes, if you're deep in this MMA world, this show was awesome. And actually on television, it was a great show. It paid off.
Yeah.
But for your average fan, this is too much stuff. We're going to talk about this a little bit more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Final segment here of the show. Brian Alvarez, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Man, we've talked a lot of stuff today in the last hour here on Easter. Hope everyone had a great Easter. And one quick thing before we go, Mike. Wanted to make sure I asked this before we head to the breaks and somebody asked. Did you see New Japan this weekend, and how was it?
I haven't seen it yet. No, that's something I'm going to have to try to see tomorrow, but I am looking forward to it.
Couple of Twitter notes here. This person notes Travis Brown broke his hand and rib during the fight last night. Yeah. Sucks to be him. That's still part of the fight. If you break your hand and lose, it's not an excuse. Don't break your hand. Don't break your rib. He had a tough time last night. Larry here, should be patently obvious, he said. They put Brian over at Mania because they felt like they had to, and now they're focused on pushing the guy that they actually want to, which he's saying would be Roman Reigns.
And hey, he says, a cynic could say that.
He says, if Reigns' big-time push is seen as overshadowing Bryan, I hope WWE is prepared for the crowds to not appreciate that. Well, I don't think they're going to shove him down our throat quite yet. We've still got a babyface run for the Shield, probably till around SummerSlam. I would think that Reigns' first big feud at SummerSlam will be against Triple H, probably beating him at SummerSlam, I would guess. Which may mean that Evolution is getting a big win at the pay-per-view coming up special event coming up in a couple of weeks. So that should be interesting. But for more, everybody, you know where to go, WrestlingObserver.com. We're out of time here. I want to thank everybody, obviously, very much for listening. I hope everybody had a great Easter. And if you've not had a chance to spend some time with your family, now is your chance to do so because our show is over.
And hopefully the bunny showed up at your house and you can play Hungry Hungry Hippos with them, just like Adam Rose.
Exactly, exactly. So again, everybody, check out WrestlingObserver.com for more. I want to thank Mike, as always, all the folks at Sports Byline who are there today working on Easter. Of course, Paul, Scott, our producer, And everyone else, Darren at Sports Byline, thanks for everything. We will be back next week with a brand new show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.